I embarrassed myself and one of the teenagers very badly. And Nicole, I want to say that I'm sorry for that. I did finally come up with a memory of you. Is it okay if I share? You and I talked about it. Is it okay if I share it before I start? Okay. One thing that we used to do, we haven't done it in quite a while, but Nicole and Mackenzie and I would go out for dinner on a Sunday evening, just to random places. And one time we decided, well, we'll go to the Texas Roadhouse. That's where it was. Nathan worked there. We thought, well, we'll go say hi to Nathan. We'll have a steak. They also have peanuts there. And I love peanuts. And there's a special talent that I developed when I was a young kid as far as opening peanuts, because it was very hard on my fingers to do that. And I decided we shared that little piece of wisdom with Nicole and Mackenzie. It was to take the peanut in the palm of your hand, just as flat as you could get it, and then you smash it on your forehead. Nicole, this is one of my first memories with you, is smashing peanuts on our foreheads. It's good times. Good times. But Nicole, I apologize. I didn't mean to cause any embarrassment last week. But good times. Bobby, I think we can go to the other PowerPoint now. What you're looking at right now, in case you're wondering, is a map of all the known sinkholes in Greene County. All of the little red dots that you see on the screen are sinkholes. And if you're looking at it going, man, is my house close to one of those? See me afterwards. I can get you the link to the website where I found this, and you can look at it a little bit closer. I looked and looked for my house, and I couldn't ever find it. But all the sinkholes in Greene County, this is the most recent one I could find. It dates back to 2005. I was hoping that they might have had an updated one, because I know there's got to be a couple of more somewhere. And the weirdest thing was, is that I actually looked at a house. As I was looking for houses, I looked at a house, and in the backyard there was this little depression, and I think it was a little sinkhole. I decided not to buy that house, but sinkholes seem to be everywhere in Greene County. Apparently they're a lot more prevalent than I thought they were, especially here, because they're found in a lot of areas with limestone, with a rock called dolomite, because those stones are very easily washed away and that kind of thing. I used to think that sinkholes were innocent enough things. Bobby, if we could have the next slide, please. They kind of occur in the middle of nowhere for the most part. There's not a lot of things around, especially when I was a little kid. We used to play in them. There were quite a few on my dad's land and on the neighbor's land, and that was the perfect place to hide out for cowboys and Indians, was down in one of these holes. And you could be down there with your guns, and you could watch and see if anybody was coming around you. It really was perfect. It was also, for a lot of my neighbors, the perfect place to throw their trash. If you've ever been there, seems logical enough. The big hole in the ground, that's where we should put our trash. They always seemed innocent enough to me. Playthings, things that we throw trash in, things that we kind of turn into a dump. Until one night when I was in middle school and high school, I was watching on the news, and I started hearing something about this house that just fell into the ground. Like the garage was gone, the living room was gone, and their car was gone, and it was down in the bottom of this hole. It was about that time that I realized that sinkholes, if they're in the wrong place, at the wrong time, can do a tremendous amount of damage. You can see this one in the middle of a downtown area. Just kind of messed up the road, probably a couple of houses, more than a couple of houses, and a number of people's lives. This particular one was in Florida. You can see it got the whole house. It didn't just get the garage and the car. It got everything. Most of you probably remember this very last one. This one was actually in Nixa just a couple of years ago, I believe, where this one actually is missing the garage and the car, and it's all way down at the bottom of that hole. Just gone. Sinkholes happen for a couple of reasons. Whether it's an old mine shaft, And that's kind of the way it was around the Joplin area, around the Neosho area when I grew up. There was a lot of mining that took place. They dug way underground. They used to say that you could drive from Joplin, Missouri to about Miami, Oklahoma, completely underground, not ever have to come back up to the surface, which was an incredible thought to me when I was a little kid. I was like, man, we got to go do that. They also occur as the water seeps through the ground, as it seeps through into everything, and it starts to wash away the dirt, it starts to wash away the rock, and eventually it just becomes this hollowed out cavity setting underneath the ground. It looks cool on the surface. You know, you can build your house on it, you can build your roads on it, but you never know when it might collapse. What it boils down to is that the ground collapses because there's absolutely nothing underneath to hold it up anymore. You know, a geology lesson is probably a little bit of a weird way to start a sermon, but I think it's a perfect illustration of our lives, isn't it? Because our lives can get so full of stuff, can't they? They get full of work, all the overtime that we have to put in, all the times that we have to go in early to work, all the promotions that we're trying to chase, all of the times that we play, whether it be physically playing, whether it be watching the games on TV. They get filled up with all of our schoolwork. You guys have been loaded down with schoolwork. It seems like sometimes that's all we do with our lives, isn't it? It's schoolwork. And as we get older, we get into our hobbies. And sometimes we let those things consume our lives. And the longer and longer that we go living that way, the hollower, the more hollow our lives get underneath. And then one day we find ourselves on the verge of collapse. Some of us, we don't even realize it until we're already there, until that cave-in has already happened, and we find our lives in total destruction. I believe that's why when we come to the Proverbs, the Solomon talks so much about our hearts. That was one word that really stuck out to me in my studies this week, was how much he mentioned the heart. And he tells us there in our scripture reading, actually chapter 4 and verse 23, that above all things, that to guard our hearts more than anything else. More than anything else in this world, to guard our hearts. One version actually says the thoughts. One translation talks about it. It's not so much, you know, like our physical heart, and you got to be careful of heart attacks and stuff like that, yes. But our hearts, our thoughts, our minds, our soul is what he's getting at. Because our hearts can be dangerous places, can't they? If we follow our hearts, they can be very dangerous because our hearts wonder, don't they? Our thoughts wonder as we're sitting there even in the pews right now. I'm sure that we're all kinds of different places, whether it be a meal afterwards, the Cardinals game this afternoon, the Royals game this afternoon. I don't know what you were watching. But our minds like to wonder. And if we follow our minds, if we follow our hearts, they can take us places that we don't want to go. Solomon writes, Bobby, in chapter 5 and verse 12, he says, "Oh, how I hated discipline, how my heart despised correction. I didn't listen to what my teacher said to me, nor did I keep my ear open to my instructors. I almost reached total ruin in the assembly and in the congregation." Solomon writes here that the heart hates to be disciplined. It hates to be corrected, doesn't it? We don't want to be told what to do. You know, when I was a little kid, I got to go stand in the corner when I got in trouble. And Mom says after a while, there was just this little brown spot in the corner where my face was. And that's the discipline that I got, especially as I got older and Mom didn't want to spank me so much anymore. And I hated it. I hated that corner. More than any other part of the house, I hated to be sent to that corner. I didn't want it to do it. It wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to be out playing with my friends. I wanted to be out doing the things my friends were doing, talking the way that my friends were talking. I wanted to be playing the way that my friends were playing. And we hate discipline in our hearts. We hate those things. And so we fill our hearts with with the things that we want to do. As we start to get older, it gets easier to tell those lies to mom and dad, doesn't it? That, oh, I'm just going over to a friend's house for the night. When really we're going out and we'd never even make it to the, you know, maybe it starts at the friend's house, but it ends, you know, wherever. We put in lots of overtime. We work really hard to get to where we want to be. We fill our hearts with the things that we as older people, as adults, as kids, that we want to do. He also writes to us about relationships. The relationships that if we follow our hearts, we look for. He says here in verse 6 and or in chapter 6, do not despise her beauty in your heart, or do not desire her beauty in your heart. Do not let her catch you with her eyes. A prostitute's price is only a loaf of bread, but a married woman hunts you for life itself. Can a man carry fire in his lap without burning his clothes? What an incredible comparison, to be able to carry fire in your lap. Again, in chapter 7, he says, he immediately follows her like a steer on its way to be slaughtered, like a ram hobbling into captivity until an arrow pierces his heart, like a bird darting into a trap. He does not realize that it will cost him his life. The places that our hearts take us, they hate to be disciplined. They look for the wrong kinds of relationships. Not quite yet. Can you back up? There you go. It can cost us our lives. If we let our thoughts, if we let our minds control the kinds of relationships that we look for, what kind of relationships do we look for? I mean, if we were just going out on the town, going to Walmart or the mall to look for girls, to look for guys, I mean, would we look for the church girls? The girls who obviously go to church. You know, they've got a Jesus shirt on, WWJD bracelet around their wrist. We don't look for those kind of girls, do we? We don't look for the girls that have a good personality. You know, we know what that is. Those are not the kind of girls, those are not the kind of guys that we look for. I can't tell you how many friends I have whose conversations, when they call me, when I talk to them, their conversations about the girls that they're dating start out with, dude, she's so hot. I was talking to one of my friends, and as he introduced his girlfriend to me, I was like, man, she is just so hot. She works at a bar. And I kind of looked at him, and I was like, okay, that's cool. And she chimes in, but it's a classy bar. And I kept thinking to myself, what is wrong? What is wrong with this picture? If we follow our hearts, look where our hearts, where those relationships that we look for. Girls, when you talk about movie stars, the movies that we go to, we choose a lot of movies by this phrase, don't we? It's, man, that guy, he's so hot. The what movies are it? Is it the Twilight movies? Is it any wonder that so many of us, even in this room right now, are stuck in the traps of pornography? It's so easy to get to. It's so easy to follow our hearts because that's something we want to do. That's something we want to see with our own eyes. We let our hearts go undisciplined and we follow them down roads to places where we don't want to be. You know, I know that my heart and my thoughts aren't always in the right places. It's very hard to bring these things under control. But our hearts, if we follow them, will help us look for all of the wrong kinds of relationships. Our hearts can also be very deceitful. They can be conceited, and they can be very arrogant. He writes again, I think in that next slide there. He says, the deceit is in the heart of those who plan evil. Everyone with a conceited heart is disgusting to the Lord. Before destruction, a person's heart is arrogant. But that's what we're expected to be by the world, isn't it? We lie, we cheat, we do whatever it takes to get ahead in life, to have the coolest friends in school, to have the best job, the best office, whatever at work. We do whatever it takes. Some of the best schemers and planners that I know are members of the church. You know, we spend all of our time watching movies and looking at things going, How could they stab the boss in the back like that? You know, how could they treat somebody like that when we do the same kinds of things in our own lives? When we become arrogant, and folks, that's where destruction happens. He tells us, I think a couple of slides later, one more. He tells us in chapter 28 and verse 26 that we're fools, that if we follow our hearts, we're fools. Trusting in our hearts makes us fools. And sadly, this is the way that so many of us live our lives, isn't it? We like to follow our hearts. We like to listen to our hearts. We do the best to fill our lives up, to make them as full as we possibly can, whether it be with work, whether it be spending time with friends, whether it be spending time shopping, whether it be spending time playing softball, playing basketball, playing whatever, whether it be watching those sports on TV, whether it just be watching TV. I know it's easy to kill a lot of time sitting in the recliner watching the Discovery Channel, whether it's with our schoolwork, whether it's with our church work, because some of us can be really busy in the church, can't we? We can get so full of stuff going on here that on the surface we look great, don't we? We've got it all together. We've got the job, we've got the money, we've got the friends, we're working on the next big promotion at work. You know, even in church, we're working on that promotion from deacon to elder, right? We have the perfect family. On the surface, we look great. And being a minister doesn't change, doesn't make it any easier to be considered a godly person, because it's easy to get filled up with all of the stuff in ministry, to be so overcome with ministry that we forget God. That we forget time to take time for personal Bible study, that we forget time to spend time in the Word. On the surface, we look fantastic. But underneath, we're a complete mess, and we're in danger of collapse. Solomon tells us to guard our hearts above all else, because he, more than anyone else, knew the danger of chasing after all these things, didn't he? Solomon went after it all. He had it all. And in the end, his life collapsed around him. If you're ever going to build, if you're ever going to be successful on a sinkhole, you've got to have something to fill it with. You've got to be able to fill that hole back up with good things, to take away the bad things that have been washed away. And this is the trap that so many Christians, so many people in general fall into, is that, you know, we come to that point of, okay, you know, I want to be a Christian, I want to be baptized, but now what? You know, we hear so much, don't do this, don't do that, that we forget to tell ourselves or find the things that we're supposed to be doing that are good for us in our lives. And that those holes just get filled back up with the same junk, with the same stuff. The same stuff that got us in trouble in the first place. We've got to have something to fill it with. Believe it or not, Greene County, if you search through all of its stuff, has about a 20-page manual on how to dig out a sinkhole, how to fill it in right, to where it's safe to build on top of it. Personally, I wouldn't want to live in a house built on a sinkhole, but it can be done. And in his Proverbs, Solomon gives us a number of ways to do it right. He gives us a number of things to help guard our hearts. And the first one is in these verses here. He speaks to us about seeking wisdom. He says, "My son, if you take my words to heart and treasure my commands within you, if you pay close attention to wisdom and let your mind reach for understanding, if indeed you call out for insight, if you ask aloud for understanding, if you search for wisdom as if it were money and hunt for it as if it were hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and you will find the knowledge of God." The first thing he talks to us about is wisdom. And he doesn't just say to find wisdom and leave it at that, does he? He tells us how to find wisdom, because it doesn't come naturally to us, does it? Like, we don't naturally go out and look for people to tell us what to do, again, because our hearts don't like that. Our hearts don't want to be disciplined. They don't want to be told what to do. You have to pay close attention. You have to pay close attention to the people that you're with, to the people that you come in contact with, some people in your life that you consider to be wise. You have to be there with him. You have to let your mind reach for it. You have to consciously make an effort to go out and get it. We have to ask God for it. And that's what Solomon did, isn't it? He asked God for that wisdom, and in our lives, we've got to ask him for the same thing. We've got to search for it. Did you notice that interesting comparison there? That's a search for it like treasure, to seek after it like money. If we worked for wisdom as hard as we work at our jobs, as hard as some people work to find buried treasure, how much better off would we be? This is such a cool comparison because it lets us know that wisdom is something to be valued, something that we need to be searching for with all of our hearts. The next thing that he talks about is here in chapter 3. He says, "Do not let mercy and truth leave you. Fasten them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will find favor and much success in the sight of God and humanity." He writes to us in these verses about mercy and about truth. If we really want to be successful, if we really want to be well known in life, what does he say? Mercy and truth. And that's the complete opposite of what we're finding, isn't it? Because the business world is cutthroat. It's do whatever you can to whoever you've got to do to get ahead. Mercy is not a trait that you find very often in the business world, is it? Being merciful on people and saying, you know, it's okay if you messed up this time. Truthfulness is not something that we find very often in the business world, in our lives in general. Being truthful with people, being merciful with people can take you so much further than being a backstabber, than being a liar. His next piece of advice for the heart comes in chapter 6. He says, "My son, obey the command of your father, and do not disregard the teachings of your mother. Fasten them on your heart forever. Hang them around your neck. Whenever you walk around, they will lead you. When you lie down, they will watch over you. When you wake up, they will talk to you, because the command is a lamp, the teachings are a light, and the warnings from discipline are the path of life." He tells us that we've got to listen to our parents. And this is probably the hardest one out there, isn't it? Being able to listen to our parents, because we get really upset with our parents. We get really angry with our parents. But obedience, I think, is the main idea behind this. Listening, obeying, because the people who are older than us, our parents, our grandparents, have so much wisdom. You know that first thing we were talking about? They have so much wisdom that we can learn from. So many life experiences that if we would just sit and take the time to listen to, you know, why you shouldn't go out drinking every night. You know, why you shouldn't do this. As children, we have the responsibility to listen. You know, no matter how old we get, no matter how old our parents get, we're never too old to not be able to learn from each other. As parents, we have a responsibility to teach. We have a responsibility to pass down our life lessons to our kids. You know, it is good to let them experience a lot of things for themselves, but sometimes as parents, we can save them a lot of heartache if we just say, you know, I tried this out. This is what happened to me. I don't want to see this happen to you. As parents, we have a responsibility to teach. Our next piece of advice comes in chapter 14 and verse 30. It says that a tranquil heart makes for a healthy body. In all of his Proverbs, Solomon finds the need to write to us about tranquility, which I think is very amazing, because where does our sense of health come from? Where does our sense of well-being come from? As people living in America today, our sense of self-worth comes from how busy we are, from how much we have going in our lives, from how busy we can at least sound to other people. But Solomon tells us to slow down. He says that your real sense of self-worth, health, comes from a tranquil heart. Being able to slow down, being able to take it easy, being able to realize when we have too much stuff in our lives. Tranquility. His next piece of advice, pieces of advice, I guess, revolve around the words that we say here in chapter 16. He says that a person's heart controls his speech, and what he says helps others learn. Whoever loves a pure heart and whoever speaks graciously has a king as a friend. My heart rejoices when you speak what is right. The words that we say are such powerful things. You know, when you get into James, he compares it to the rudder of a ship. Such a small thing as the tongue can drive the whole ship. The words that we say have such power. They have power to tear down. It's so easy to do that with our words. It's just to tear people down, just to chop them down, blow by blow. When in fact what he tells us here in that very first verse is that what we say should help other people learn. Our words should be encouraging, should be there to help other people. We have to work to fill our hearts with the good things. It's easy to let our hearts fill up with that stuff that we were talking about earlier because we hate to be disciplined. We want to do what we want to do. Our hearts want to go where our hearts want to go. But Solomon tells us that we've got to guard our hearts. We've got to work to do that. We've got to work to fill our hearts up with the good things. Words of Paul come to mind here as he's talking to the Philippians, as he says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, keep your thoughts on whatever is right or deserves praise, things that are true, honorable, fair, pure, acceptable, or commendable." Familiar words, aren't they? Our hearts and our thoughts can be such dangerous places if we let them rule our lives. If we let them take control, and if that's what we follow through life, they can take us into so many terrible places. I want to close with just a few more thoughts from Solomon tonight. I didn't put them on the screen. I want you to focus on these things. But just listen to this verse in chapter 14. He says that a heart that turns from God becomes bored with its own ways. The heart that is not focused on God gets bored. The heart that seeks after its own, or that goes after what it wants, gets bored very easily, doesn't it? We're after this one thing, you know, we're after that promotion, and we've got it. And after a while, it gets boring. So we go on to the next thing. We're looking for the next biggest and greatest thing. For a long time, I didn't have a cell phone. When I finally got one, and all it would do was make a phone call. After a while, I started seeing, all the newest, latest, greatest cell phones that came out. I had a cell phone. The next phone that I got would send text messages. And that was the coolest thing in the world to me. And I ran up a huge bill. But it was the next latest and greatest thing because, who needs a phone that just makes phone calls? I mean, that's just absolutely worthless, isn't it? So we have the phone that we can call and that we can text. And the last phone, I just bought it not all that long ago. It gets on the internet. It sends text messages. I can use it as a video camera, as just a regular camera. There's stuff on there that I don't even know how to do on it. But it's the next latest and greatest thing because that other stuff gets boring. If we're following after our heart, we get bored. The same goes, if you're caught in that world of pornography, it's not good enough to just be looking at this. You gotta go. The same with drugs. As you get into drugs, you start with like marijuana, and before long you get bored with that, and then you're into heroin, you're into whatever else. And that's the thing. We get bored with our own ways, and we've got to find the next greatest thing out there. In chapter 19 and verse 3, Solomon tells us that the stupidity of a person turns his life upside down, and his heart rages against the Lord. Following our hearts can take us into such terrible places, to where we actually find ourselves going against God. We find ourselves raging against God, and then we find our lives completely upside down, completely caved in upon itself, where some of the coolest things that we had in our lives are now down there in the bottom of the hole, and we're never going to get it back. It's hard to buy sinkhole insurance. I looked on the internet this week, and there's not much of it out there. The only way that we can keep our lives from becoming a sinkhole is that if we guard our hearts, because they are the source of life. They are the source of our lives. They are the source of our praise. They are the source of our worship to God. Chapter 27 and verse 19 says that as a face is reflected in the water, so a person is reflected by his heart. They are the source of our lives. They are a reflection of who we truly are. If we're out chasing the things that we want just for the sake of chasing them, that's who we are. You know, we say we're a Christian, but we're really not. If we're busy filling our lives with stuff, trying to stay busy, trying to do all the stuff that we want to do and say we're a Christian, we're liars, guys. Our hearts are a reflection of who we are. If we fill our hearts with the good things, if we fill our hearts with God, then we're headed in the right direction. I don't know where most of you are tonight. I hope that your lives aren't in sinkhole mode. I hope that you're not in the middle of that collapse or on the verge, but if you are, I want you to know that this church loves you, that this church is here to help you, and that if you need prayers, you can come down here tonight and we can pray for you. If you need to accept Christ, if you need to be baptized into Him, we can do that for you tonight. If there's anything at all that we can help you with to help you guard your heart better, please come as we stand and sing.